And my first 6 months there, I was like, no, I cannot. This is insane. This is so hard. I'm probably gonna get fired.
Podium was really the one that was like, I didn't have a choice. It made me evolve and it made me really answer the call.
My daughter, she was young at the time, and she had drawn a picture of the family. And then up in the corner, she drew an airplane, and that's where I was. Dude, that freaking gutted me. Know what your strengths are and double down on your strengths so you can accomplish what you set out to accomplish if you work for it.
Welcome to this week's episode of Seuss Aloud. My name is Connor Rodich, and I'm here today with a very special guest and someone I look up to a lot, Brian Oram. His role here at Job Nimbus to be the sales leader and someone that really just spearheads the growth of this organization. And I couldn't be more honored to be sitting here with him today. We've gotten to know each other a lot over the last few years, and I'm just really looked up to him. I thought, you know, someone that was like obviously a very great leader, but also just a good human being. And so I couldn't be more excited to share his story from the lens of more of a business leader than an entrepreneur. And it's somebody that I'm just really intrigued to get to know his story and be able to share that with you here today. So if you haven't already, please like and subscribe to the content, and please make sure that you share this information out with those that you might feel like need this type of story or this type of encouragement. It would really mean a lot to us on the No Suits Allowed podcast, and obviously mean a lot to the person that you'd be sharing this information with. So without further ado, Brian, thanks for being on, brother.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
One thing you forgot to mention was that I beat you in golf.
Yeah, thank you.
I think that's an important opener.
Yeah.
That we did golf together.
We did, and I was...
And I did kick your ass, so...
Thank you for reminding me of
I
that.
I think it's important that the viewers know.
I think it's important for them to know how nice of a golf course that was and how disgraceful I was.
No, actually, at altitude, your ball... I there's not one shot I hit that was longer than you. Like, you absolutely obliterate the ball, so that was fun.
Well, and speaking of altitude, which all of the people that are sitting in this room here yeah. probably were like, this guy seems a little nervous. No, I'm actually used to just being able to like run through the whole intro without taking a breath. And then I just realized that I'm a little bit at altitude and I'm at sea level. And so there's quite a bit difference. And it's also like I'm recovering from the smoke and all these things. So, you know, I was getting like lightheaded as I was doing my first run. So you got to see the second run of that. And so let's get into it. So, yes, thank you for reminding me that you busted my balls at whatever golf course. It was nice.
Yeah, I don't even know. Oak Ridge Country Club,
which has seen some PGA players out there in its time.
Yeah.
And I absolutely just disrespected that golf course. I did not. It was like an 88, and that's disrespectful. Let's be honest, because I told you, I was like, traditionally, so here's the thing, before we get into you, which I'm so glad we're just doing this, because this makes the viewership go up when we start like this, because they're like, yeah, let's just talk about nonsense.
Yeah.
You are a good golfer, obviously.
Okay, golfer.
No, you are a good golfer. You a 70s golfer.
Yes.
Okay, and that's a good golfer. A lot of people would do a lot of things to be able to shoot in the 70s. So I am also somebody that used to be a plus handicap, this was used to, like back in the day when I was 45 pounds less heavy and like probably more athletic. And so I was telling Brian that before we went out, I was like, yeah, man, I usually shoot in the 70s and like I'm not too bad. And then we go out there. I mean, the first one off the tee was just like, just ripped. I mean, it was just like, you know, way off and out of bounds or something like that. And I'm sure in his mind, he's like, yeah, this dude, he is full on lying to me. So anyway.
No. That was fun.
We had a good time, but you know, there's some nice houses. I'm pretty sure I hit a few of them. Like there was some moments. I only think I maybe had like one good shot all day.
But that's golf though. That's what's great about golf. It's what makes it so hard. It's why everybody keeps coming back.
I've decided though that I'm gonna hang up the thought that I'm gonna be good again, and I'm just gonna become a long drive person. That's all I'm gonna do.
Oh yeah, just obliterate the ball and who cares where it goes? Yeah.
Who cares?
Great idea, actually.
So let's talk about you.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk.
Get enough about golf. All right, so Brian.
Yeah.
Brian, what I know about you, you're a great guy. You know, obviously we connected really early on, but just interested in your story, want to know a little bit more about where you started and where you're kind of filling the gaps of what brought us to today, if you can.
Yeah, sure. So, golf, son of a educator. So my dad was a teacher my whole life. So grew up on a teacher's income, sole provider. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, took care of the kids. So like I grew up with enough money, but didn't really have like any excess money. So for me, it was, okay, I need to get a job. If I want to play a sport, I got to pay for my way and stuff like that. And that actually helped a ton as I was growing up, learning how to manage my own money and learning that, like, if you want something, you got to go get it and figure it out. So went to college at University of Utah, met my wife there. We got married very young. I was 23. And we just tried to figure out how to make it for the first couple of years. And then I actually was at a family reunion one day, and my cousin's husband, who was in tech, he was actually at Adobe. He was a VP of sales at Adobe. And he was like, hey, I think you'd be great in tech. Because I had done door-to-door sales and had been successful there, but wasn't loving the door-to-door scene as much and wanted to kind of see if I could get into tech. And so he introduced me to this company that had just started. I mean, they were a brand new company. They'd started maybe 6 months earlier and out of like an incubator program. And they had just secured $500,000 in investment from Google Ventures. And I was employee number, I think 13 or 14. And so my job was to hit the phones, dial all day long, and try and see if we could scale this company into something. And, you know, the likelihood of a startup making it is like 1%. It just doesn't really happen very often. And even venture-backed companies, especially the early seed round companies, they fail typically. And so I thought it was worth taking a risk on. I appreciated the intro that he provided me. And so I wanted to make sure I did not miss out. So I worked my tail off. I mean, it was like, I didn't know tech yet, but there was one thing I knew, and that was that nobody was gonna outwork me. So that was the goal. It was like, nobody outworks me, I'm gonna be there and I'm gonna do the best that I can. And it ended up being, you know, really successful. And I ended up being their top sales rep year over year, which was a huge blessing for my wife and I. It changed our trajectory income-wise. But also, like, it introduced me to the world of software that I love, and introduced me to just phenomenal people, companies. We ended up scaling to the point where I was selling to like Uber and Slack and Twitter and LinkedIn, like all these massive Bay Area companies, being able to tour the facilities, meet their executive teams. It was a really cool experience for me early on.
It sounds like it was pretty early on. Yeah. So, and then going through some of the more recent, which we'll get into a little bit, but just like to close the gap to today, go ahead and explain some of that.
Yeah, so top sales rep there. And then I was recruited away to go to a company called Podium, which was this startup doing, I think, $12 million in ARR at the time. And they were trying to, they were an SMB software for brick and mortar. Actually, roofing was one of their, you know, verticals. HVAC, plumbing, they sold to auto dealers, everything. And they needed to scale their enterprise motion. And I had been selling an enterprise software to all these different companies. So I took that project on and was their first outside hire to try and scale that thing. And again, and we'll get into the hardships of that because it was nuts.
Sure.
Yeah, but ended up, you know, 4.5 years later, scaling that to a multi-billion dollar organization and a really successful enterprise team and revenue stream. From there, decided to try and take on the full like sales, marketing, CS type thing at a company called Via. That was a year and a half of just an absolute grind where the product just could never get off the ground. And I made some mistakes that I learned from. Then went to a company called LVT. LVT, LiveView Technologies, is a multi-billion dollar company here in Utah that scaled, you know, seemingly overnight. They went from nothing to like $300 million in just a few years. So it was a fun ride, and you know, I ran sales there. And then Job Nimbus actually reached out to me, 2 years ago. And when they reached out, I was really in a good spot. Like, I was happy. I was loving LVT. I was loving what we were doing, loving scaling that org. And I resonated so much with the mission here. And then Ben, obviously you've had Ben here
the
show.
Yeah.
Ben was so impressive.
Yeah.
And when I met Ben, that's when I was like, oh, okay, something's different here. And this, I need to be part of it.
So yeah,
that's what brought me here to be chief revenue officer. So here at Job Nimbus, I run sales, marketing, CS, or CX, so customer experience, support, as well as our RevOps org.
Yeah. Recap of all the acronyms. Not that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
No,
that's
but,
a good point.
You know, SMB, small market business. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of things. You have a lot of diversity in your, you know, you talk about, like, customer experience, sales, all these different things. So I want to go into, like, a ton of different directions. But the first thing I want to ask you is, I want to ask you, like, where do you think you got your largest growth in your in your professional life? Like, where do you think you were like, okay, I'm better at my job than others. I can obviously show that I can grow an organization, a sales organization, the organization as a whole, whatever. Like, where did that part of your, like, what part of your life? Ooh,
that's a good question. I think my first gig, which was a software company called Team, that was my first gig in tech. I'd been pretty good, like, the year type stuff in door to door. But when I went Team, that first tech company, I had no idea if I could make it. And being their top rep year over year, that sort of unlocked in me, like, oh, I can do this. And I can do this at, like, companies doing hundreds of millions in sales. And, like, I can actually, I've learned enough that I could actually help scale companies. So when I went to Podium, my thinking was like, man, I could really make a difference. And my first 6 months there, I was like, no, I cannot. This is insane. This is so hard. I'm probably going to get fired. Like, this is nuts. So Podium was like, I was riding this high of like, man, making the, you know, better money than I had. And that company got sold to WeWork for $100 million. So they went from being worth nothing to $100 million in 3 years. And I was like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Get to Podium in the first 6 months, I've closed like a deal, you know? And this is an a small business product. Remember,
I'll get rid of acronyms. No, it's okay. I know. I just like making sure people know what we're talking about.
I'll get
so
rid of
more
acronyms.
Of small business product, which is like not enterprise. When we say enterprise, we're talking larger clientele, whereas we're like meeting
it. Yeah, billion-dollar companies, multi-billion-dollar companies. Some actually, the largest health system in the world is one of the companies I ended up selling to at Podium, and that was a market I was trying to break into with a software that had never sold to a company that had more than two locations. So that was like, man, I was banging my head against the wall for a long time trying to figure out how do I position this product and how do we get the features that we need to actually, you know, make a dent up market in some of these bigger companies. And the first 6 months, it was just like just a ton of self-doubt, a ton of, this isn't gonna work. And I remember this conversation with my wife where we had actually, one of the things that we had done is we had moved to be close to Podium. So we moved an hour away from home, moved next to Podium so that I could just spend 12 hours a day there. And I remember coming home one night and I was just like, babe, this is not working. Like I'm not having success and I feel like I'm working as hard as I can. I don't know what to do, but I don't think this is gonna work. And she looked at me and she was like, Brian, we burned the boats. There's no option. And I was like, okay.
All right. Well, I got to figure it out.
I got to figure it out. It was the coolest. My wife's a badass, but that was cool. That was like that was a pivotal moment for me to be like, oh, I don't just turn tail and go to another company because I and blame the company's lack of prep for enterprise sales. I got to go figure this shit out. So that was that one conversation, like, that conversation and then a conversation with my boss changed my career trajectory, because I could have easily turned tail, went back to the company I'd come from or found a different software company in the Valley and been a sales rep for them until I made another excuse for why I couldn't hit quota.
Yeah.
But instead it was, oh no, I need to figure this out. And so I tripled down. I did more research than I ever thought I could, you know, on the market. I researched my competitors like hell. I figured out what our competitive advantages were that nobody else had really figured out. And then I also figured out, this is probably one of the most important things, what was repeatable and scalable in my motion and what was repeatable in the companies I was trying to sell to. So I looked for, okay, what are we successful in the small business? What are they buying us for? Okay, what would an enterprise company buy us for that same reason? Okay, then I'm gonna limit the market down to these specific companies that fit that mold, and I'm gonna only sell to them. And that decision, along with all the research that I'd done, is what changed everything.
That's awesome. So really it was in kind of two parts, really. It was like the early, like, hitting top sales and top sales, and you're like, okay, I've figured something out. But then there was almost this like, which we all go through ups and downs,
yeah.
But then there was really this like, okay, Podium was really the one that was like, I didn't have a choice. And then it made me evolve, and it made me really answer the call, which is great. That's awesome. Cool. So let's get into, some of those like low moments, like some of the times where, cause I know you're like, you know, my wife's a badass. She kind of put me, you know, she's like, you're gonna figure this out, dude. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Yeah. You know, moving closer in proximity to an office, so that way you can be there 12 hours. I'm sure that was a season of life that was probably, cause you got kids, you got family. Like, how many kids do you have?
I have three kids.
Three kids,
yeah.
And a wife. And for everything I'd imagine they're just as solid people as you are. I'm sure you raise a good family, but you have like all these obligations over there. And then you're also trying to grow a career, which is always a struggle, whether you're an entrepreneur or someone that's in your position as like a real, you know, high level business leader, a VP or one of the CEOs, whatever, CROs, whatever. So that being said, like, what are some of the times in your journey with those different companies that were like, yeah, I mean, this really tested us? Or, I mean, I know you already mentioned the Podium one, where it's like, I gotta figure it out. Was there any other moments in the process?
Oh yeah.
Definitely a few times for sure where, that's the first one where it was just, well, the first one was the big risk of jumping into tech, not knowing if this company was gonna be successful. I remember there were times at Team where like all the snacks were gone. I was answering the phones as a sales rep and getting calls that we were 3 months late on our rent, thinking, oh, this company's going under. And then a week later, we closed on our Series A and all that stuff. But like, so that was the first moment where I was like, oh shit. The Podium experience was interesting because the first 6 months I really thought like, I might lose my job. This is wild. I feel like I'm working way too hard to lose my job. But it was a lot of me creating excuses rather than just taking ownership. So that was a big lesson for me. During that time though, when I like had that burn the boats moment with my wife, that was when I just doubled down. I figured out a lot about the market. I also figured out what it was going to take, which was in person. So I ended up, I mean, I was on airplanes every week. Like, I was just gone. Yeah, you know. You know how that goes.
Sorry.
Well, go ahead.
Continue. You know how that goes.
No, I do.
And with little kids, it is so hard. And it was hard on my wife. It was hard on our marriage. It was hard on the family. But it was also hard because, you know, you want to be there as a dad. You want to be there as a husband, but you also need to be the provider and you need to make it work. So all of that just battles in your head and you try to figure out what the right balance is. And I think at that time it was, well, I have to make this work. So the balance doesn't matter. I'm just going to make this work. And if that means I'm gone, means I'm gone. And I was gone. I was gone a lot. And I've got all the diamond status to show for it, right? Which whatever. But the interesting thing was I remember, okay, so I mean, this is multiple years of figuring it out, actually being the top sales rep year over year at Podium, it ended up, which was great. But, and then ended up leading that whole team and ended up being the VP of enterprise. So it works out long-term. But during those years, it was really difficult to figure out how to balance. I remember one time I had got home from a trip and was sitting there with my family. My daughter, she was young at the time, and she had drawn a picture of the family. And my wife was there, she was there, my kids were there, my dog was there, on the ground smiling on this grass field she drew next to the house. And then up in the corner, she drew an airplane. And that's where I was in her drawing. Dude, that freaking gutted me.
I'm sure.
That was so hard because I realized how she saw me, which was like absent. I'm not there. That was crazy.
Yeah.
And it hurt. It hurt because I realized I wasn't fulfilling my obligations as a father, but I was fulfilling my obligations as a provider.
100%.
It's so freaking hard to do both well.
To do both. Yep.
And that was a pivotal moment for me. I also couldn't really change my schedule either. Like I still had to make it work. One of the actually huge blessings for me ended up being COVID because everything stopped. I traveled up to the week of shutdown. I was on a plane the day they shut down everything, you know, got home. Turns out I actually got COVID on the plane because I got home when I was sick as a dog, had COVID. It was nuts. Yeah. But like, I remember when COVID happened and the world shut down for a bit, especially like in tech and software, they took it way too seriously. we don't got to get political. We don't get, like, they took that shit way too serious.
Yeah, it's like, right.
And so I just like wasn't traveling for a bit. And holy crap, I reconnected with my family, connected with my kids. The drawing of me in the airplane was like a distant memory for my daughter. But then, you know, a year later, like I'm back at it, flying everywhere again. And so learning how to balance that, I think, was really hard. But one of the other things that we had to do was teach our kids that like dad's the provider. Like in the olden days, dad had to go hunt. In the new days, I'm hunting on airplanes. Like that's sure. what I do. So yeah. part of it was like teaching our kids my role, as well as like when I'm home, I'm home. Yeah. So one of the changes I made was being very intentional with my time when I was home.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't gonna be home every day.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was home, I was there, I was with her, and then I would, whatever hobby she was into, I was gonna be fully in on that hobby. So those are some of the changes that we made to make it work. But I just remember being just stabbed in the heart when I saw
I saw that dream. No, I've been there my own way. Maybe not the picture, but like,
yeah.
This, and even it doesn't get any easier every year that goes by. And I've made a lot of adjustments also of trying to like get off the road. Like 2022 was 100 and some odd flights in that year, you know what I mean? And then 2023 is maybe like 60, and you know what I mean? And then you're kind of dwindling down. So like we're working in the right direction, but still there's moments, like even now I'm out here, I'm in Utah, I gotta go from here to Colorado, I gotta get back home. Then after that, I gotta get out to Pittsburgh before we go to Maine for a month. But like the adjustments, as you're talking about, is like now once a year, every year I go to Maine with my family for a month, and I am like dad there, you know what I mean? And so I think everybody has their own way of finding what is the solution. I think the common theme though is that like you have to do both, and you have to find a way to do both in the way that works for your family and your kids and all that, you know, your wife, etc. So but no, there's so much relatability there. I didn't actually know that about you, which I'm glad you shared, that you were like a road warrior for a while. Because and then you said like, it's so funny because I always get messed with whenever I'm like, you know, I've got statuses on all the airlines and I did it the old fashioned way, not by buying the credit card and use it like just on buy seat miles. Time, brother. Like just sit, you know. And so when I go to like airports and stuff and I'm like flying with family or my team or something, and I'm like, I have diamond status here, whatever. And they're always like, oh, the triple diamond, you know, like always, like, I'm like, it's not a prideful thing. It's but you said that you were like, diamond status on everything, whatever. Like it's when you live that life, it's like, you know, you're making an impact, you're providing, you're doing all the things you're talking about, but then it's like, all right, what are we really doing here?
And it's taxing. Kind
of that moment of realization. And it's very taxing, hard on your health, you know, all of those things. So you now, so pivot, you're now here, you know, and you've got obviously a great gig. You're not having, I assume, to travel as much as you are, right? I mean, I can see, it's cool to hear the story, because I'm sure in that era of life, you were probably, you know, you're a well, I want to say this in a way that doesn't sound like weird, but like you're a well thought out, well constructed human being. You can tell that like you're like intentional about those things, just being around the office or going to play golf with you, whatever. But I'm sure there was a moment in your life where you didn't feel that way, and you like didn't feel optimal or optimized. You know what I mean? And not that we don't go through seasons of stress or seasons of, you know, like pushing, you know, but I could sense that there's like, that was real growth. So the professional side was growing, but also the personal side was growing, which is great. So.
Totally. Well, and I had to figure out how to just be incredibly disciplined and regimented in my life to make sure that I made time for everything. Because if I didn't prioritize me in the morning, then I wouldn't ever take care of me. If I didn't prioritize time with my kids and my wife when I got home, then that wasn't going to work, right? And then I had to, for 12 hours a day, prioritize work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm very, very regimented. Like every day, 5 a.m. is I wake up and I'm in the garage gym, and that is 2 hours of my morning, every morning without fail. If I don't do that, everybody's going to know because I'm pissed as hell. That's part of it, right? Is the discipline. And then from there, it's okay, work, you know, 7 to 6, 7 to 7, and then it's family. And unless I'm traveling, but yeah, that's important.
That's good. All right. So I have another question about, you know, you obviously have risk tolerance. Like because you were talking about like early on, and maybe less risk than you were than you were like with your wife early on, and you're like, we just have to pay rent and we're good, you know, or whatever. But because I know that era too, I was probably more risk tolerant in that era as an employee, right? But
sure.
You clearly have risk tolerance to you and bet on yourself and bet on the company or whatever. So you're in this business leader seat and you really have always been in that. And I don't know of the other things you've done outside. Maybe there, you have special interests or hobbies and things you like to do as more of the entrepreneurial side. But what, because you're an interesting guest because most guests are the entrepreneur. Like most people that we bring on, they're like the guy, you know, or they're like the person that, you know, they you heard you talk about Ben, right? It's like he had foreclosure notices and he's putting it all on the line, and you know, and then all of a sudden it's like you hit something, and then you all of that pain and that suck paid off, you know what I mean? And now we're at least moving in the right direction. You have a similar experience in some of these businesses, but you're not like the entrepreneur.
Yep.
What would you define as like the difference between you and another entrepreneur, or in like someone that's like Ben, or is there really no difference? You just found that you were better in the seat of like, kind of, I don't want to say like riding shotgun, but it's like someone like really to get behind someone like Ben. Like what does that look like?
Yeah. So I think in a lot of entrepreneurial settings, there's the innovator and like the integrator, you know, thinking of EOS principles here, but like I have often been in my career, the, fully willing to take risks, but more of the operator, more of the integrator, more of the person that sets up structure, discipline across an organization so that it can scale and grow, rather than maybe the big idea guy, risk it all type of a thing. So it's hard to describe because in sales, and again, I grew up in sales, you're basically the entrepreneur CEO of your territory.
Sure.
And you either make it or you don't, and your ass is on the line every single month to deliver. So in that sense, like very entrepreneurial. I'm also an investor, so I invest in different entrepreneurs and I love it. Have I started my own multi-billion dollar software company? No. I don't know that I will. Like I actually love supporting entrepreneurs and helping them take their idea to the market and scale it.
You don't seem like a flight risk. Like you don't seem like someone that's like here for a stint. And like you're like here. Like you're like,
oh, absolutely.
We're putting this thing
until we accomplish what we're out here to accomplish. I'm not.
Yeah, because there's got people that are around like that are they're kind of like sitting in a seat. They have more entrepreneurial tendencies, and then you know they eventually leave.
Yeah, I'm an operator. I'm an operator. I'm here to do a job, and I'm not gonna leave until that job is done. That's right.
And I think one thing to kind of touch on, and we don't have to get into specifics of your own personal finances, but you can do very well in the seat that you're in. And I think that gets lost a lot because there's people that like, if they're great at their job and they grow companies to multi millions and billions of dollars, and they're a permanent fixture and someone that's really a driver in that business, you don't have to be the entrepreneur to like do extremely well, which I know you talk about, like I invest in other businesses. I have that's like, you don't have to be just like the guy that's at the top of the food chain to like do that, which is important because a lot of people will look at, you know, someone like a Ben in this organization is like, oh, you can't make it, you know, in this life unless you're Ben. Or that's kind of a stigma sometimes. So obviously tech, there's more layers and more infrastructure and hierarchy than like a construction company or some other thing.
Totally, yeah.
But that is a true situation. That is true. I mean, that's fact that you can be in a great position and be someone that grows businesses rather than like starting them and spearheading them. You know what I mean?
So,
I mean, is there anything else you want to share on that? Or
I just think it's important to like know what your strengths are and double down on your strengths and believe in yourself. Like that's the most important. And if your strengths are entrepreneurial and like you're the idea guy and you from zero to one, that's freaking awesome. I'm the guy that takes something from 1 to 100, you know, and that's what I love to do.
Yeah.
And that's my specialty. So that's what I'm going to double down on.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I know we have just a short time today because we got other festivities to get to. So we'll wrap up. I want to kind of, I'd love to spend more time with you.
Yeah.
We could talk for four or five hours. We could do a Rogan podcast version where it's like, just sit there and talk until we're tired of talking. When you look at your entire, you know, career and all the things, you know, that you're, I would say like two parts. What are you most proud of in the process of, you know, your growth and how things have been going? And then secondly, like what's been kind of the thing that you want to leave with the audience as something that you've like really learned through the process?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. So I think the first thing is the I think the thing I'm most proud of is the people that I've been able to work with and seeing them grow. I love watching people grow and accomplish more than they thought they could. And I love helping in that endeavor. I love it. And so building teams and teams that go accomplish incredible things, it's my favorite thing in the world. It's what I love to do. It's why I love team sports. It's why I'm addicted to sports on TV. Like, I love football, I love basketball, anything, but because I love watching teams go accomplish things and I love building those teams. So that's the thing I'm most proud of, are the teams and the relationships that I've built along the way. Absolutely. And here at Job Nimbus, I am incredibly proud of the team that we have, the team that we've assembled, and what we're accomplishing right now is it's pretty incredible. It's really exciting to be a part of. So definitely most proud of that. And then the thing I guess I would leave for the audience is just that it doesn't matter how smart you think you are. It doesn't matter how talented you think you are. You can accomplish what you set out to accomplish if you work for it, and if you set yourself up for it, and if you make the sacrifices along the way to do it. There's a ton of people that I think want the types of careers that that Ben has, or that I have, or that you have, etc. And none of us are special. It requires a shit ton of work, prioritizing your life, and then being ruthlessly committed and dedicated to the outcome. So that's, I guess, what I would leave with anybody is whatever you're trying to accomplish, whether it's a triathlon that you're trying to run or whether it's a business you're trying to build, as long as you surround yourself with great people and ruthlessly prioritize your time with the end in mind, like, you're going to be successful in what you do.
I love that. Cool. You rocked it.
Done.
You're a professional. I need to bring you on and we'll Rogan it next time. You know, we'll get a table in between us and have a few, you know,
cigars
and some things, and we'll have a good time. All right. Well, that's a great episode. Thanks, Brian, again, for another episode of No Suits Allowed. And again, if this was a episode that resonated with you, or feel like this is something you should share with someone else, please do that. Please like, subscribe, and just let us know what you think. And we would love to be able to share this message. This is a sharp dude, someone that knows. I mean, we're not special, but he's got it going on, and it's been the time that he's spent on himself and his family and all those things. So be on the lookout for future episodes. Appreciate you guys joining us again today, and we're looking forward to the next episode. But make sure that you share this one to somebody that needs to hear it, and we'll see you next time. No Suits Allowed.